2 Chronicles chapter 10. Now Solomon has died, and Rehoboam, his son, is really due to become king, but there is opposition from Jeroboam, who has tried to rebel against Solomon and has run away to Egypt. Well, Rehoboam, now that Solomon's dead, verse 1, he went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. You wonder why this was at Shechem and not at Jerusalem, which surely was the effective capital of the kingdom. And I think it's simply because Israel, as in the 10 tribes, rather than Judah, wanted him to be king. Although the formal division between Israel and Judah only happened at this point, I think the terms are already being used in the record in that sense, even at this time. So, the old men, when they say to him, look, the people will have you as king, just don't be so abusive to them as your father was, they were right, because actually the people of Israel did want Rehoboam to be king, and they actually came to Shechem to make him king. So actually they were favouring him over Jeroboam as a king to replace Solomon, who died. You learn in 1 Kings 11, 28, that actually Solomon had particularly targeted Ephraim, that is the 10 tribes, or particularly the very large tribe of Ephraim, as a provider of slave labour and tax revenues for all his crazy building projects. And it's not surprising then that they come to him, they specifically come to him, verse 4, and say, make lighter the heavy service and the heavy yoke which your father put upon us. Incidentally, that's the very language, putting a yoke upon people, that is used in Leviticus 26 about what Egypt did to Israel. And, of course, the building of store cities with slave labour that Solomon did, that was just what the Egyptians did, using the Israelites to do it. Likewise, when they complain here about the hard bondage that your father gave us, this is the very phrase used to describe what the Egyptians did to Israel. So Solomon was acting like Pharaoh. Of course, he was married to Pharaoh's daughter. And I think that he justified himself doing this because of the proverbs that he keeps on and on saying in the Proverbs, that a rod is required for fools, that actually this is how you must treat foolish people, that you've got to be tough with them, you've got to whip them, etc. Proverbs 10:13 in the Septuagint, he that brings forth wisdom from his lips smites the fool with a rod. So it's Solomon justifying himself, really, although this is all divine truth, as it were. It's got the subtext of self-justification. Well, Proverbs 26, verse 3, as a whip for a horse and a goad for an ass, so is a rod for a simple nation. Well, this is Solomon justifying himself, and that sort of harsh attitude to people you see in fundamentalist Christian groups today, where the idea seems to be, we have got truth, absolute truth, and anyone who doesn't get it is an idiot, and you can despise them. That is seen today. And it was the same, I think, mentality with these people. So, the old men wisely tell Solomon, don't do this. Drop this. If you drop this, you know the people actually love you. They'll actually have you as their king, no problem. But instead, he listens to the younger men. I say younger because Rehoboam himself was about 41 at this time, and they are described as the men who grew up with him. Well, he would have grown up in the harem. And Solomon, as you know, had 700 wives and 300 concubines, so there had been a huge number of kids. And many of them, like Rehoboam, would have been only half Israelite. They would have been the children of Gentile women, like Rehoboam's mother was an Ammonitess and so forth. And therefore these youngsters, as they would have been growing up with him in the harem, they'd have been sort of shut off from reality in the harem because the women weren't allowed out. Once Solomon had slept with them, that's it, they had to stay. under lock and key, and so they became pregnant and had the kids, and the kids likewise would have grown up fairly isolated from society, and of course with plenty of money and wealth and the gadgets of the day, because they were the king's sons. And so it was very easy for them to say, no, 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 tell them, tell these guys you're going to be tougher than your father was. That's the sort of attitude that you get from people who have not really engaged with real life, people who've lived in cocoons. They lack any humanity. Now, you may say, oh, no, I've seen hard times. No, I know what it's like. Yeah, if you live in the Western world, and actually if you've even got internet access and a cell phone, you are well up in global society. And you may be very well up in it. And this can easily lead to a harsh attitude that the poor are poor because they're stupid, that these people are fools and we should treat them as fools. And in a spiritual sense, it's true as well. People who grow up cocooned in their denominationalism taught God's truths, and they are God's truths from babyhood, really, by loving parents, etc., and particularly if you marry somebody from the same group, it all becomes a bit of a cocoon. And although you don't realize it, you can become very harsh to other people, that they're all fools, they don't get the truth, they don't see it because they don't want to see it. So, yeah, sure, let's be harsh on them. And in fact, what you see here is that the choice between being hard and soft is not at all automatic. There's something very attractive about taking a harsh line. You wonder why cruel dictators like Hitler, to some degree Mussolini in Italy, why these guys came to power and remained in power when they were very harsh and cruel to some sectors of society. Why? Because actually that kind of hard line is actually attractive to human nature, because we are not humble, because most people have not allowed themselves to be humbled by their sins and to realize that I'm only alive every breath I breathe by God's grace, because the wages of sin is death and I have sinned. And he's keeping me alive by his love and by his grace alone. And I therefore lack any inclination towards gentleness and grace in return. And the idea that the fool and the idiot should be punished, and the lazy should be punished particularly, that is attractive to people who work a fair day's work, etc. And it's also attractive, as I say, to those who haven't done a day's work and yet are so cocooned, either by wealth or cocooned in a spiritual sense. And as I say, these young people who grew up with Rehoboam would have grown up in the harem. They'd have been cocooned away from society, whereas the older men who advised him to just slack up a bit and have a bit more humanity, they were people outside of that cocoon. And well, what they say is absolutely true. So I think there is therefore a fair bit of challenge to probably most, if not all, hearers of these words, that, like it or not, we have been very blessed one way or another. And there is a tendency, therefore, to become harsh, to lose your humanity. And that is, I think, what happened to Rehoboam, and that was the influence of the younger people upon him, who likewise had grown up in the same kind of cocoon.